worldview. So there's a lot to think about. There's a lot that might rattle you. So be patient through the process. Think about it. Things that don't make sense or things that your mind is really rebelling against, write them down, and then we can talk about them. Okay? In this course, we've been going through the steps of the gradual path to enlightenment based on Atisha and later Lama Tsongkhapa's rendition of it. So we're basically at the beginning of the text. I'm trying to give you some thorough teachings to fill in a lot of the gaps from other teachings you may have had before and to present things in a logical process. So it will take us some time to get through the teachings, because if I went quickly, then you would probably wind up still having the same holes in the understanding that you had before you came. Okay, so there's four main points in the outline. So we talked about the qualities of the compilers, the authors of the Lamrim, the lineage, and we talked about the qualities of the text itself, you know, especially how to enable us to understand all the steps of the path in an unconfused way so we can put it into practice. We talked about how to study the teachings and how to listen to them, and then how to teach them. So we talked about, you know, the qualities of a qualified teacher and how to transform ourselves into good listeners and students. And then, we're on the actual fourth point about how to lead somebody on the path. And last week, before really delving into this fourth point, I stopped and inserted a whole lot of material because Lama Atisha and Lama Tsongkhapa presume an awful lot in the Lamrim. They presume that you already believe in rebirth, that you believe in karma, that you believe in cyclic existence, that you believe Buddha, Dharma, Sangha exist, all sorts of things that us, we people from the West, don't necessarily come into these teachings believing in. So last time I talked a lot about rebirth and how it functions, you know, the fact that we have a body and a mind, they're different continuities, but that they, you know, they both continue, they don't end at death time. And then I talked briefly about how the actions we do in our life leave imprints on the mind stream that will determine where we get born as and what we experience in our future lives. Okay, and so this being the basis for some kind of care and concern for our ethical conduct and how we relate to other people, not only, you know, because of the results that our actions bear now, but for what they'll bring us in future lives, and for also, of course, how we influence other people. Then I talked about how knowing that this whole cycle of existence is unsatisfactory, knowing that it's caused by ignorance, the wrong conception of who we are, and then its branches of attachment and anger, that, you know, these dissatisfactory conditions and their causes, which are the first two of the Four Noble Truths, can be removed by generating the wisdom that understands reality. In other words, the wisdom that understands that things are empty of inherent existence. So this wisdom will cut the ignorance from the root. So this whole topic of wisdom actually comes much more in detail, very far along on the path. I'm just trying to give you an overview now so that you know a little bit of where we're going. Yeah. And then how, having removed the ignorance from the path, then we're no longer obliged by the force of our own disturbing attitudes to take rebirth. Okay, we can attain a state of arhatship or nirvana, where we can abide in a state of bliss, or we can enter the bodhisattva vehicle, where out of compassion, we deliberately continue to take rebirth, but not under the force of ignorance, once you're a high-level bodhisattva, but rather under the force of compassion so that we can be able to benefit others. Okay, so that's what we talked about last time. There was a lot in that talk. There's a lot to think about. Take some time to understand it, and it certainly rattles up a lot of our preconceptions. Okay.